Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, your lines have been placed on listen-only until we open for questions and answers. To ask a question, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Ms. Amy Fricke. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Laura. Good morning and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Amy Fricke, one of the organizers for today's call. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today. Today's webcast is presented by the Illinois Department of Human Services, Division of Mental Health, and the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative. The title of today's webcast is Effective Utilization of the CRSS Professionals, Part 3, Professional Training. Before we begin the formal presentation, I would like to review with everyone a few helpful tools and housekeeping items for the online portion of the forum. If you happen to get disconnected from the audio portion, please call back into the same number you just dialed. It is 1-888-677-0065, and the passcode is Illinois. The visual portion of this presentation is web-based. Of course, you can choose the audio portion only, but if you would like to log in to see the webinar presentation PowerPoint, the login information is located on the invite you received after you registered. If you are experiencing any problems with a particular link to join, you can also go to www.joinwebinar.com and enter the web ID, which is 363-545-034. There will be a designated question and answer portion towards the end of today's presentation. We ask attendees to hold their questions until this designated answer and question period. The operator will then open the lines for you at that time. And lastly, at the conclusion of the presentation today, we ask that you please complete the brief satisfaction survey that will appear when you close out of the online forum. It should take you less than 5 minutes to complete the survey, and we value your feedback. Without further ado, we will now begin the formal presentation, and I would like to turn the call over to our first speaker for today, Mr. Bryce Goff. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Amy, and it's great to be with everybody today for this third part of the four-part training series on effective utilization of Certified Recovery Support Specialist, or CRSS, professionals. We do have two previous sessions under our belt now. The first was on preparation and planning, and the second was on complex relationships, and we're pleased to let you know that both of those presentations are on our website. That is www.IllinoisMentalHealthCollaborative.com, and we have both the PowerPoint presentation that many of you are viewing on your screens, and we have the recorded audio. So we're really happy to announce that we have that both under the provider section of the website and under consumers and families as well. If you go to consumers and families and select CRSS from the left-hand menu, you'll go to a page that's totally devoted to the CRSS credential with a lot of good information that we'll be referencing throughout the presentation today. We do have one remaining future session, and this is a really important one. It's on program sustainability, and that is on February 28th, again from 9 to 11 a.m. So a great topic. In other words, when you have a new program, a recovery support program, and you want to make sure that it's built to last, this will be a great session to listen into as well. So I'd like to introduce the presenters today. First, I'm pleased to have with us Nanette Larson, the Director of Recovery Support Services from the Division of Mental Health. Welcome to the webinar, Nanette.
Good morning, Bryce. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Again, my name is Bryce Goff. I'm the Director of Recovery and Resilience for the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative for Access and Choice. And I'm also pleased to have with us Sean Johnson. Sean works for the Collaborative as well and serves as a peer and family support specialist. Welcome to the webinar, Sean.
Thanks, Bryce.
I'm going to share with you our objectives for the webinar today here before we begin. And here are our objectives for today. Participants will learn the purpose behind this movement of hiring CRSS professionals, how to teach this vision to existing staff, when and how to train CRSS professionals once they're hired. We'll also learn about the importance of person-first language, examples of some special areas of training for the CRSS credential, and where you can find additional sources of training. And now I'm going to transition it to our next speaker, which is Nanette. And Nanette's going to talk to us about training your current staff. Nanette?
Thank you, Bryce. Good morning. So we're going to start off by talking about what new areas of training need to be considered for our current staff as we prepare to hire CRSS professionals. We recognize that your organization may have hired CRSS staff or peer support staff or peer mentors already. So in this presentation today, when we are referring to current staff, we are talking about your other staff. We try to, you know, make a clear delineation in some way or other in this particular webinar about the fact that staff need training, and all of your staff are staff. Your peer mentors or CRSS professionals are staff, and all the rest of your staff are staff. And so we tried to figure out some way to put it up on the screen that made sense. So we decided for this presentation to talk about current staff, meaning those who are your staff before you hired or hire the CRSS staff, and then a separate part of the presentation we're going to talk about training the CRSS staff. So in some cases, even though you've already hired CRSS staff and therefore they are current staff, just for this presentation, understand that when we're talking about current staff, we're talking about the non-CRSS professional staff. Okay, so first and foremost, when providing training for current staff, you want to start off with teaching the vision. You want to clearly communicate to staff what the vision is. In other words, why are we doing this? Why are we hiring CRSS professionals? Why are we hiring peers to provide peer support services? Why are we hiring persons in recovery? What's the point? What's the big picture? What's the vision? You want to define and describe what the expected outcomes are. What are the expected outcomes? What are you expecting to get out of doing this or out of making this change within your organization? Because it is a change. It's not just hiring one new person or two new people. It's making a change in a way of doing business within your organization. So you want to explain to staff what the expected outcomes are. And you want to educate all employees on why the agency has decided to do this. It's important to start with the big picture and the vision before getting into the role and specifics. It's easy for the organization to jump right in and say, we're hiring peers to provide group services, and they're going to be doing intake, this and that, you know, and to talk about their specific duties. But if you jump right in and talk about their specific duties, your staff is left out in the dark as far as understanding the point, why you're doing this. And you haven't really addressed the all the unspoken questions that you've probably resolved in your mind, which is why you're moving in that direction in the first place. So you want to make sure that you're teaching the vision first. So in terms of teaching the vision, we provided a couple of pieces of information that may be helpful and useful in doing that. First of all, you might want to make the connection for your staff that your organization is progressing along the lines of the vision which is shared by the state of Illinois. The DHS Division of Mental Health mission statement says the expectation is recovery. All persons with mental illnesses can recover and participate fully in a life in the community. So yes, DHS is one of your funders, so to speak. Well, you don't have to, you know, turn the tide to every funding source that you have, but you could choose to indicate that you're in line with the vision of the state of Illinois and the state's movement in this direction. But not only in the state of Illinois, but also by a national movement in this direction. The President's New Freedom Commission on Mental Health, a report that was released several years ago, 2003 to be exact, is a report that began to change the tide in mental health services for the entire nation. And so communicating with your staff that this is a trend that is not a fad. You know, it's one thing, when I was hired 12 years ago, I kept hearing people say, this is a fad. This is a passing thing. And I just kind of said, okay, if that's what you believe. But, you know, 12 years later, hello, it's not a fad. It's a global situation, okay? So, I mean, we put up the national thing, but my inbox is constantly bombarded. I know I bombard all your inboxes, too. But I leave out all the stuff I get from other countries. You know, so this is something that's going on globally as well as nationally. So sharing with your staff that what's happening in the corner pocket of rural Illinois, if that's your situation, is part of a big picture and not just something that your CEO kind of had an idea about. Might be helpful in them getting a feel for what the importance of what's going on is at your organization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you could also share some of the specifics behind the purpose. What is the purpose behind this move toward hiring CRSS professionals? These bullet points that are on your screen here are bullet points that we pulled directly from the brochure that was developed a couple of years back called A Brand New Day in the Illinois Mental Health System, Employing Persons with the CRSS Credential. And it says that CRSS professionals infuse your agency with hope and empowerment and improve opportunities for others to develop hope for recovery, increase problem-solving skills, develop natural support networks, and participate fully in a life in the community. Now, when I read these bullet points, I said if I were your current staff, I would probably say back to you, if you were training me and using these data points, wait a minute. Excuse me? Aren't these the expectations or the points that any mental health service provider should be doing? It's not just CRSS professionals who develop hope. Isn't that the job of any social worker? Isn't that the job of any case manager? Isn't that the job of any community support staff? Aren't they supposed to all be increasing problem-solving skills and developing natural support networks? Isn't this what we're constantly teaching people that they're supposed to be doing? And yes, the answer is yes. They should be doing that. That is the expectation. So CRSS professionals are not replacing them in doing those things. So what is it that CRSS professionals are doing? Well, if you participated in the last webinar we had on complex relationships, you may remember this analogy or example that we used. But CRSS professionals do those same things that other staff do, but they do it with a different perspective.
Hmm.
They do it, we said last time we talked about using night vision goggles. They do it with fresh eyes. They have new lenses. They have a different point of view. In other words, when you hire staff who have personal experience, lived experience in recovery, they come in and they see things that other staff might not have otherwise seen. And so they bring hope not only to the persons that are served, but they bring hope to your staff as well. Your staff will find that working alongside persons who are in recovery helps them to begin to shift their point of view. I can personally share that my boss for 12 years until his retirement of the end of 2011, moment of silence for those in mourning, but, you know, he said for all those years that working alongside me changed his entire point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It changed his entire perspective on everything he'd done. He worked in mental health for 44 years, but the last 12 of those years brought him an entire different perspective because of working next to me. Hearing that the first time he said it, I just kind of like thought it was weird. The second time he said it, the third time, the fourth time, the 15th time, and 4 or 5 years in, I began to realize how profound it was, the impact I had on him, and realizing that he'd been doing this work for his whole career, but he'd not been doing this work from the perspective of working alongside and knowing a person whose life truly had been recovered from experiencing serious and persistent mental illness diagnosed according to the DSM that you all use in your professions. And so it changed his whole point of view and outlook in terms of hopefulness in the field. So hiring these persons is not just doing the same thing that everyone else does. It's doing the similar things from a different point of view. Okay, so you might be asking, when and how should I be providing this training for my current staff? The answer to the question, when, is now. Right now. So ideally, if you have not yet hired peer staff, persons in recovery, CRSS professionals, and you're planning this, you're thinking about this, you're beginning to organize yourself, that's why you're participating in these webinars, you should be training your staff now. Because you want to get them on board with the vision, the very thing that you're trying to, you know, thinking about and why you're doing it, you want them to be able to ask questions, get their concerns out in the air, and you want them to be on the same page with you. You want to have their buy-in, so to speak, in the process before you hire these new individuals on the team, so that when they are hired, they step on board and they actually have a welcoming committee. I can say in all sincerity that when I was hired to work at Zeller Mental Health Center, I did have a welcoming committee. And that's because Bob Vyberberg had spent quite a bit of time preparing his team, and they were, like, excited. They'd been waiting for the time to come. And not everybody was happy to see me. I can say that quite honestly too. You know, but there was a good bit of the leadership team that was very well prepared and very excited about the things to come, and so then I had a team that was ready and eager to have this new point of view on board. So that's an important piece. If you have already hired CRSS professionals, you say, okay, well, we missed the mark. Well, not necessarily. The time to train is now, but the how is going to be a little bit different. If you've already hired CRSS professionals, then when you go about doing this training, you want those CRSS professionals to be standing next to you when you're doing the training. In other words, you still want to train and communicate the vision. It's not too late to communicate the vision just because the staff has already been hired a year ago. You know, I got a couple agencies in my mind, and I think, well, maybe one, if they're wondering, well, we didn't do all that. What should we do? And I know you hired your staff a year ago. Okay, well, that's fine. You still want to get out there and train the staff and communicate the vision. But, A, you don't want to then say, okay, Bryce, we hired you. You're the CRSS professional. You go train the staff, okay, because that's like throwing Bryce under the bus. And you also don't want to go out there and have Bryce just be in the audience. What you want to do is do it in a partnership with your peer professionals. You want to have, as Bob and I did, Bob and I went together and we trained together the staff to help them understand and communicate the vision and help them, those that had not yet heard, and in many cases in the North Central Network at that time, we were trying to help communicate the vision to many of our agency providers in our network that we served. And so we did that together to try to help them to understand. Instead of Bob saying, well, you're our new, quote, consumer services specialist, you should teach them all, he and I did that together so that they understood the partnership and they heard it from both points of view. So the content of the training, you want to, of course, communicate the vision, communicate the why. You also want to communicate the logistics. Your staff are going to be wanting to know, what is this person or these people, what are they going to do? So you want to communicate the duties and what they will be doing and how they will interface with and work with your current staff. And then the materials. What materials might you use? Well, we recommend that you use the materials that you've gained from these webinars, especially this one here, as well as the one that we had just recently on complex relationships. And we really strongly promote the use of the CRSS study guide. The CRSS study guide is an excellent resource for doing training. Even though it's called the study guide and people therefore kind of naturally think, well, it's designed to help me study for my test. Well, that will be useful, but it's also really well laid out to help communicate what a CRSS professional does and what the content of their duties might be and what the expectations might be. And you also can use your regional recovery support specialist with the Division of Mental Health as a resource for providing such training or helping you to design such training. So don't forget them in the process. And then the last bullet that's on your slide there is to remember to include training as part of the orientation process. So you may be, you know, just getting this program off the ground. This may be new. It's fairly new in most agencies. But it's kind of, you know, it's a moment in time situation, but you don't want to forget to go back and include it in things that are not a moment in time situation. So, you know, think about the orientation for new staff that you already have in place that all new staff go through, so that when you do have new staff coming on board, they have the same modules or the same information that you're providing in a big kind of powwow for your current staff right now. All right, so kind of wrapping this piece up on the when and the how, just remember that as you train, take a similar approach as we've taken in these webinars. You know, try not to patronize. We've been careful not to patronize our provider staff. As you are listening, we try hard to validate what you already know, recognize that you all know a lot about all of these things, but at the same time, we're trying to get everybody up to the same speed or up to the same page. And so we provide that information while at the same time validating that many of you may already have a lot of this information and may already be there. So saying those kinds of things out loud helps your staff not roll their eyes and say, well, we already knew all that, and, you know, you're wasting our time, right. You know. And so just validate what staff may already be thinking helps go a long way. And you may also want to be able to recognize strong or obvious allies among your team. You know, there are those that are going to be on your team that are going to be easy to get on board with the vision. And so, you know, draw them in, draw them close so that they are the welcoming committee.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, recognize also that you may have certain areas of resistance. And so identify that among your leadership. Say, okay, well, we recognize that this may be an area, and I'm not going to say it's by discipline, you know. In one agency, it may be all the social workers are going to be resistant. In another agency, it's going to be all the psychiatrists, you know. In another agency, the psychiatrists are going to be the allies. You know, and so you never know. It's not necessarily a disciplinary stereotype. It's just that some areas you're going to be able to recognize in your own organization. Speaking of disciplines, discipline specific, I think it's important also to just mention that, and I've sent information by email out about this recently, but all the big national organizations, such as the American Psychiatric Organization, the American Psychological Organization, the National Association of Social Workers, all those big discipline-specific organizations are currently working on their own recovery curriculums. So, again, this whole thing about recovery is not a fad, here's the evidence. You
right.
know, so there was just a recent report that came out showing that all of these major disciplinary organizations are releasing recovery curriculums that are designed to kind of speak the language of that discipline, so to speak. And so that may be some information you could draw on to help meet the needs of your staff. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and transition over to Sean, who's going to be talking to us about the importance of providing training for your staff on the issue of person-first language. Sean?
Thanks, Danette. And yes, this is another important area of person-first language. And the goal of person-centered language is to change the attitudes and practices, not simply to find new names. Person-first language is important in terms of person-served, but also keep in mind person-first language is important when referring to CRSS professionals as staff. And we should be careful, or it's important to be careful to introduce a CRSS staff member as a professional, not a person with a challenge or a diagnostic destination. In some cases, I've heard throughout the years, staff or support people, peer support workers referred to as prosumers, or she or he has a mental illness too, and they might be great at helping you. In one case, which reminds me, matter of fact, the director of recovery support services shared with me, Nanette, a person referred to her as being the top consumer in the state. And that is something I think that's definitely not maybe the best choice of words and doesn't speak to the position that she actually holds. So that didn't leave the greatest taste, so to speak, in her mouth. And, you know, this is more about being clinically correct than politically correct, which overall can benefit the staff and the person served all together. And CRSS experts are experts in the power of person-first languages. It definitely can make a difference to the individuals. Changing the way we talk can help change our thoughts and actions. And moving on, it's important that we make a concerted effort to educate staff about how to speak respectfully about persons with mental illnesses. It's not just about finding new names or labels. Person-first language is important in terms of shedding labeling language to see people as simply people. For example, it's not about going from the term manic to being now bipolar. Language should focus on the person served rather than a disability or diagnosis. And where we know and understand that CRSS professionals have some experience with recovery, under no circumstances should the CRSS professional's diagnosis be discussed or speculated about by other staff. And remember that self-disclosure is the staff's personal choice and is not something that we can or should do on their behalf. This is about being clinically effective. Hopeful language improves recovery outcomes. It can make a difference in how a person sees themselves and their potential to recover. And next I'm going to talk a bit about under training current staff in those cases where there may be some potential periods of illness. Treat the employee as you would anyone else who's been absent for work. For example, if cards and balloons are a part of your office normal welcome back get together or expression, so to speak, for a person who has had prolonged illness, you may wish to do the same. And on the second bullet point, let them know that they were missing. You're glad they're back. Don't treat them as if they're fragile. Talk to them as if you normally would. Or maybe offer if there's something one might be able to help to do. And this is important because sometimes it can be patronizing to treat a person a little bit differently and knowing that they were out or having the impression that they were out due to maybe some mental health concerns. It could be the same as anyone who has some physical health concerns, so it shouldn't be a variation there. Okay. And upon the professional's return to work, the CRSS professional or staff member, update them on any changes that may have happened throughout the time that they were out. Reorient them back to work. And also, in some cases, a person may need some time to ease back into their responsibility. And if they request this accommodation, then that's something should definitely be considered. And I think it's important overall to the performance and going into welcoming them back and letting them ease back into the position and taking on their responsibilities and so forth. And at this time, I'm going to let Bryce give us a little bit more information about the CRSS credential.
Thank you so much, Sean. Now we're going to talk about the CRSS credential in a little bit more specific detail. And this is an outline, this section that you can use with your staff. When you're hiring the CRSS, you know, people may have a lot of questions about what the credential is. So right here over the next several slides, you've got an outline that you can use, and please feel free to do so. So the CRSS credential is a credential for people who provide professional peer support services for persons in recovery. A recovery support specialist is a professional trained to incorporate their unique lived experiences in recovery to support others with similar conditions. Now, your staff may be familiar with the Certified Alcohol and Drug Counselor credential, the CADC, and it's good to know that the CRSS was designed and is owned by the Illinois Certification Board, or the IAODAPCA, as some staff will be familiar with it. And in many ways, it was structured in a similar way to the CADC credential. So I think it helps to have a frame of reference for staff to know another credential that they can kind of compare this to. CRSS professionals, of course, must meet an acceptable minimum standard of competency, and this includes knowledge and skills to provide the unique function of mental health recovery support. Your staff may be wondering, okay, so how does a person obtain the credential? Well, first, a person interested in getting the CRSS credential has to complete and submit an application to the Illinois Certification Board, or IAODAPCA. The Illinois model for mental health CRSS is a document available from the certification board that outlines all the requirements for the credential and includes the application. And that is available on their website at www.iodapca, that is spelled IAODAPCA.org/forms. Requirements for the CRSS credential include having a minimum of a high school diploma or a GED, also having 2,000 hours or the equivalent of 1 year full-time paid supervised work experience, and also having 100 hours of supervision in the CRSS performance domain. 100 hours of training or education related to the CRSS domains are also required, and successful completion of a written exam for the CRSS credential. So I think it's important to give the other staff not just an indication of why it's important that we're hiring these people, but more specifically give them appreciation of what skills, experience, competency are being brought to the position. You know, in years past, I think we too often heard, we're hiring consumers. And we're not just hiring consumers, as valuable as that is. We're hiring competent professionals who have a lived recovery experience. And I think that's a much more impactful way to frame it. And to recognize again that folks with a CRSS credential have a similar level of training and experience to someone with that CADC credential that we mentioned. Nanette, would you like to take it from here to talk a little bit more about those core competencies that I referenced?
Okay, sure. Thanks, Bryce. So we're going to talk about the training of the CRSS staff. And the information here is still, very useful for your current staff.
Yeah.
All right. So, again, we try to kind of draw a line and create some kind of a clear distinction in what we were presenting in this webinar in terms of training that your current staff need versus training for the CRSS staff. But at the same time, I think it's important to note before we move forward that this information is also in useful information in training your current staff. In other words, the more information you provide your current staff about what the CRSS staff have learned or are expected to learn or have to learn in order to obtain their CRSS credential, the more confidence your current staff will have in terms of working alongside the CRSS staff versus, kind of using that old language that Bryce used, so we're hiring consumers? Mm-hmm. No, we're hiring competent professionals with lived experience in recovery. And providing them some concrete information about that is really going to help them to grab hold of that vision and to feel more confident about that reality and feeling more like they have coworkers versus you've hired the clients. Mm. These are persons with competencies in certain areas. Okay, so we've put a picture, I love it, that we've included the front cover of the study guide, so you can see the picture of the study guide itself that we referenced earlier in the webinar, a picture of that right there on the screen for you. And we recommend that training be modeled around the core competencies of the CRSS credential. So when you're providing training for your current staff about this new vision of your organization, or when you're providing training for the CRSS staff, that you kind of use this as a handy outline, that you use these four domains. The domains are advocacy, mentoring, recovery support, and professional responsibility. And CRSS professionals benefit from plenty of training and practical skills. So just some specifics about the type of training that is helpful to peer providers or recovery support specialists. And, you know, I use a lot of different terms. Every time I say CRSS staff, I kind of toss out two or three or four things at once: peer providers, peer mentors, recovery support specialists, CRSS professionals. You know, the goal is that all of our peer support specialists have their CRSS credential. The expectation down the road in the state of Illinois is that CRSS professional peer providers will all have their CRSS credential to be working in mental health centers, which is why we decided to title this webinar series Effective Utilization of CRSS Professionals instead of Effective Utilization of Peer Staff.
Mm-hmm.
We really want it to be clear that the long-term goal and expectation is that that we will be hiring persons with the CRSS credential and that we'll be working in that direction. So that's why I kind of use those terms interchangeably, but I kind of wanted to spell that out. Okay, so the training and practical skills that may be beneficial. Number one, using one's recovery story. Every person, obviously, who's going to be stepping into these roles comes with a recovery story. That is what makes us unique. That's what makes us different from your current staff. We come with our own personal recovery story. And how about this? What makes us unique is that we come with our personal recovery story and we're willing to share it.
Yeah, that is different.
Okay, so I always say, you know, one out of four, what is it, one out of four now? That's the new statistics. That means one out of four of your current staff also have recovery stories.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not choosing to share it, and that's fine. It's just that the peer professionals have chosen to share that information with persons who are receiving services. And it's absolutely fine that the current staff are not choosing to share that story. That is absolutely everyone's choice, and it's a difficult choice to make. And once you've made it, you can't unmake it. And so I absolutely respect the professionals who choose not to make that choice. I wonder how Marsha Linehan feels now, right? 30 years of not choosing to make that choice. She's now done it on the front page of the New York Times. And who knows how she feels now, but for 30 years, she decided not to do that. And so, you know, it's fine that many of your staff have a recovery story that they're choosing not to tell. So it's important to also say, and I try to do that a lot, is say it's not just that the new staff have a recovery story. It's that the new staff have a recovery story that they've chosen to be public about, and they've chosen to tell the person served about that story. And many of your staff have a story, and we need to respect their privacy and respect that they're not telling it and not say, well, these new staff are better because they have a story that they're telling, right? But they might need some practical skills in telling that story, and this is probably one of the most important pieces of training. I like to use the Kenny Rogers lyric, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run, you know, because you can't just be all out there with the story. It just doesn't always work that way, and so sometimes the learning curve is a difficult one when we step into this role and we know that we've been hired to share the story. We have to kind of find our way, and we also might need some actual training in how to share the story. So I asked Bryce about this when we were preparing, and Bryce was sharing a little bit about how he found his way. So Bryce, if you would like to share about that, I'd really appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure, Nanette. I remember when I was hired into working in mental health in about the year 2000 initially, I was hired into a peer support professional role where my identity as a person with a lived recovery experience was known by other staff and by persons served. And I knew that telling my story could make an impact. I knew it could make a difference in other people's lives because I had experienced that myself. I remember an important point in my own recovery journey was someone sitting down with me and sharing their story with me. But that story took a long time to tell. I mean, it was over several coffees, several lunches, and that was what I was coming to the mental health field with. I knew that the power of a story to make a difference. But at the same time, I've got to be a little vulnerable here and saying that I wasn't sure exactly how to do that when I started. I knew I wanted to do it, but I didn't know how. And there was admittedly a long learning curve with that. You know, sometimes I remember having a conversation with a person and thinking, it would be really helpful for this person, you know, for me to share a piece of my story. I think it will convey some hope. But I can remember some instances where it just worked really well. But other instances where I would start telling the story, but I'd realize over time that the story was getting really long.
Right.
And certain aspects were really relevant to the person, and other aspects of my story had nothing to do with what they were going through. But it was all part of this big story that, you know, I felt like, you know, there's all this context that needs to be told. But ultimately, in those cases where I didn't meet the person where they were at, the person I was trying to help, you know, ultimately kind of disengaged in the conversation. And I realized that they weren't quite getting what they needed. And so one of the best tools that I've gained in my professional life in providing recovery support is something that we call the brief compelling introduction. And this is something that I learned in Wellness Recovery Action Planning, RAP training. And it's a storytelling approach from RAP that's a way to tell your story within 5 minutes. Wow.
Right.
You know, when you think about your own life, we all have struggles in our life that at one point or another we can share with someone else to help them. But conveying that in 5 minutes, that's a real challenge and a real discipline. And so every time I hear, you know, Nanette, you tell your story, or Sean, you tell yours in 5 minutes, and it conveys such a powerful message of hope, you know, I think about all that went into getting that huge story down to 5 minutes. And that's a lot of work. I appreciate that so much. And so what I've learned is to tell my story from different angles. We all have different angles to our story, different milestones, and I've sort of learned to select different slices or take it from a different angle to meet the person where they're at. Mm-hmm. And again, that skill that I learned in RAP is one of the most impactful thing in learning to use my own recovery story effectively. And so for folks on the phone, if you have someone that you're working with that you know, they seem to be on the journey of learning to tell their story, I'd really encourage you to encourage them to get involved with RAP, talk to their regional DMH recovery support specialist, other people in the field who've already been on that journey and can help them learn to tell their story more effectively. Thanks, Nanette.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. That's excellent. And, you know, you probably remember this the minute I say it, but we had kind of extracted that skill building from RAP and taught it in the CRSS
right.
On, you know, training that we did last year. And we haven't put together our curriculum for this year's CRSS training, but that's so powerful. And everybody that went through the CRSS training last year had the opportunity to write their 5-minute brief compelling story. It is one of those skills that you know, once you begin to practice it, you get that rhythm and have just the 5 points to a story and realize that, you know, that you can say a lot with little, and you don't lose the person's attention. Speaking of which, we should probably move on.
Yeah, you know, I would just say that, you know, in looking at the evaluations from that training, that was the one thing that stood out as the most valuable thing.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm glad that jumped in my head while you were talking. So obviously, another piece of training that folks are going to need is training in the role of peer support in the recovery process. Peer support is another unique thing that persons are bringing to this role. They're going to be professionals. They're going to be serving in a professional role. They're going to be staff, meaning they have badges and keys. You know, I always say the minute you've got badges and keys, you're in a hierarchical situation. But you're intentionally choosing to serve persons within that organization, you know, persons served within that organization in a peer-to-peer approach. versus as a hierarchical approach. And learning how to do that is a skill, and so needing training in that. And it may be something that can be done through the course of supervision. And in many cases, you'll find that the CRSS professional is training their supervisor about this approach,
mm-hmm.
because it is so different from the approach to services and treatment that is traditionally part of the mental health system. And then some training in advocacy for recovery-enhancing environments. The CRSS professionals bring a unique perspective, as we've said many times, that night vision goggles kind of a concept. And with that, they often come in and they see the need for change in the environment, and they may need some training in how to appropriately advocate for those changes in the lighting, in the artwork, in the safety of the place, the emotional safety of the place,
mm-hmm.
the restrictiveness or the freedom, the feeling of restrictiveness and freedom, that whether or not the rooms that the persons are receiving services in have any sense of hope and inspiration or not.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us who've received services were very aware of our surroundings, and we're very aware of how hopeless or hopeful those surroundings feel to us. And so learning, having some practical skills about how to advocate for changes in those environments may be useful. Okay, so continuing to talk about special areas of training that would be useful for CRSS professionals. One is regarding creating relationships that promote recovery. Obviously, last webinar number two, we talked about complex relationships, and CRSS professionals, by the nature of their job, are entering into complex relationships with the persons that they serve. It's a complex situation.
Mm-hmm.
Just by nature of the position that you're in, you're automatically entering into a complex situation. And so having some training and some skills in that area is going to be really essential. Some of this training is going to come, as I've referenced already, through the supervision that is provided. And they're going to need some actual training, whether you send them to training, whether you see training offered and you say, hey, we as an organization will sponsor you to go to this training. But you know, what they've done effectively, particularly if they have not worked in an agency before, what they have excellent skills at is being peer supporters as friends. But they may not have skills at being peer supporters as a professional.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different and difficult transition to make.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing, a phrase that Bryce uses when he teaches or trains his staff, and I've picked up from him and I love it, is that we are providing friendly service, but we're not developing friendships. And I like that distinction because it's an important distinction. We're being friendly.
Mm-hmm.
The friendliness that we do well, we're continuing to be friendly, but we're not doing that with the same outcome.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm friendly with people outside of the workplace that are not receiving services from me, I might be friendly with the desired outcome of getting a date. Sometimes that's on my mind, being honest. Okay, I might be friendly with a desired outcome of it developing a long-term friendship for life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might be friendly for a lot of reasons. But when I'm friendly with a person who's receiving services from me, I have to recognize that the desired outcome is that their recovery is enhanced, that they understand that I've been where they've been,
mm-hmm.
and that they engage in friendships outside of the workplace.
Right.
That they transfer those skills of this friendliness, that they transfer that into relationships that will last,
mm-hmm.
that can last without the boundaries of, I still have a badge and keys, and you're still a client at the agency.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult, complex reality. And developing that understanding when you've been good as a peer supporter, but not had to do that with the boundaries of a staff position, that's a skill that needs to be developed.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that creating relationships that promote recovery piece that I wanted to talk about in particular is how valuable the relationship itself can be. This friendliness, the value of this friendliness, and I think that sometimes, let's say the supervisor can get nervous about the friendliness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this is dangerous. This is, you know, this is going to be confusing to the client, so to speak. Or, you know, I'm not sure how, you know, this is not how we do business, you know. You're being too friendly, or, you know, you're sharing too much, or you're being too personal. And yet, the friendliness, that relationship, is really what is the context for recovery to occur in.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, it was in the context of that friendly relationship that recovery became possible. I developed a friendship with a person who had a unique way of bringing balance to the message that all things were possible, while at the same time helping me to see that I could do things to help myself in recovery. But she never left me hanging. She never left me hanging like, you know, like I was alone in this process. She helped me to see support in a way I'd never experienced it before. And so the equalizing
mm-hmm.
aspect of peer support, that concept, that aspect of peer support, the equalizing aspect of peer support in the context of that relationship is where my recovery began. And it's in the context of those situations that recovery begins. And that's why the skill building is needed to help persons in these positions to understand how to create those relationships that promote recovery and the importance of the momentary nature of that. You know,
mm-hmm.
your intention is to develop a relationship that helps a person to get these new skills that helps them to see that they have it in themselves to recover,
mm-hmm.
and they can move on and develop friendships that will last, that don't have the boundaries, so to speak, of that situation. Okay, they also, as any other staff, are going to need some training in effective listening and asking questions. Motivational interviewing skills are really helpful. And also using dissatisfaction as an avenue for positive change. Kind of as I referred to when talking about the environment, CRSS professionals often come in really able to see needs for change.
Mm-hmm.
But they may need to learn some skills about how to become part of the solution instead of just kind of pointing out, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem. That dissatisfaction is a good thing. So as a supervisor, you don't want to squelch that and just say, well, look, you know, we know we got a lot of problems. You know, get over it and do your job. You don't want to squelch that. You want to actually capitalize on those new eyes that they're bringing, but they may need some skills in knowing how to advocate for positive change when they're seeing the challenges around them. And then another skill, and we're closing out on this area, special areas of training, but they may need some skills in transitioning the probably very positive personal skill that they have about combating negative self-talk, translating that into something that others can use. So, and this is just one example of a wellness tool that a person may have. They come with a lot of personal wellness tools, we.
Yeah.
You know, we come with a lot of personal wellness tools, and we may need some tips and tools and knowing how to take the wellness tools that we've been using to help others use those tools as well. And negative self-talk is just an example of that. So knowing how to model those wellness tools, to show others what skills that we're using, and then also to teach others how to use those tools as well. Another skill area, and Bryce is going to talk about this one, is the importance of learning how to teach others how to do some problem solving. So Bryce, if you want to talk about that for a minute, that'd be great.
Sure. So in my first year of providing peer support professionally, one thing that I came up against a lot was people feeling like I can't work. And I remember asking the question to a group of individuals, how many here want to work? And no one raised their hand. And after some thinking, a colleague of mine said, Okay, I think you may have heard the question is how many people here feel you can go back to work, but what he was asking was how many of you want to work. Wow. And then everyone raised their hand. Everybody wanted to work.
Wow.
The wall that we'd always hit was, okay, I've been told that if I go back to work, I'll lose all of my benefits. And so the discipline, the skill that I was able to develop out of that were some problem-solving skills and helping people to look at, okay, here's a problem. Here's what seems like a wall, a boundary. What are my options? How can I weigh the positives and the negatives? Maybe it's not just a black and white scenario. Maybe there are ways for me to go back to work where I won't lose all my benefits. And without getting too much into that, the truth is that many people are getting back to work, mm-hmm. and conducting this kind of problem solving with them can be helpful. And
yeah.
So I think I'll just take a second here to plug the idea of connecting your recovery support specialist with any employment specialist you have or with a benefits coordinator and letting them know that there are ways to help people problem solve going back to work.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent example, and it's hard not to sidebar on that.
Yeah.
That important piece about work, because work is so important in person's recovery,
mm-hmm.
And I was just having a conversation with somebody about that last week about, how work helps us to stay well, so that's important.
Yeah, when I was able to see people empowered with good information,
mm-hmm.
then they were able to make good choices. And,
yeah.
I've seen a lot of people go back to work that through this kind of problem solving have been able to reach their goals.
Wow, that's
thanks.
Fantastic. It's exciting, too. Yeah, so, and the third point there about the role of spirituality in recovery, this is a specialty area for CRSS professionals. It's important to know, many of you probably already know this, but there was a big study done a few years back, I think in 05 or 06, about what helps most in recovery. It was a report called Recovery, What Helps and What Hinders. And one of the top items that was identified as helpful in a person's recovery is spirituality. And on the flip side, one of the top areas that was identified as a hindrance in recovery is the kind of inability to talk about or deal with spirituality in the context of mental health services.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, we've really coming a long way. We've come a long way in being able to open the door to dialogue about spirituality and help people embrace their own personal spirituality and not feel like this is a taboo conversation.
Yeah.
It's not a taboo conversation. Let me just put that plainly out there. It's not something that should be considered taboo or something that we can't talk about. It's critical. It's a critical part of a person's recovery. For many, many people, over 80% of persons in that study identified spirituality as critical to them in their recovery. And so how the CRSS professional can help is that CRSS professionals are in that 80%. Over 80% of the persons that are going to be hired into these positions are persons who identified spirituality as critical in their recovery process, so they have some way to personally relate to that. But they may need some training in terms of how to help people have the freedom to express and benefit from their own spirituality in the recovery journey without being directive or evangelistic or, crossing the bounds that are inappropriate. There are lines in terms of those conversations that we can have with folks, and we want to be careful so that we aren't overstepping the line while at the same time we're creating a free atmosphere where a person can explore and discover their spirituality and is able to have that conversation and feel that they are validated in that part of their process. And then lastly, in terms of specialty areas of training, before we move back over to Sean, we couldn't move too far away from training without talking about REF. Wellness Recovery Action Planning obviously is a really important piece. Not every person who's going to be hired into a role as a CRSS professional is going to be a REF facilitator or is going to need that level of training. However, I strongly believe that every person in these positions is going to benefit from having basic RAP training. All the regional recovery support specialists are qualified to come and provide what we would call a RAP orientation or a RAP seminar, RAP introduction as a one-day overview that gives your staff, and it doesn't have to just be the CRSS professionals, if your staff at large hasn't had that level of training, that would be a great one-day seminar to host at your agency so that everybody understands the basics of wellness recovery action planning. But it is typically common for the CRSS professional or the peer support staff to be the go-to person about RAP. In other words, persons served at your agency are very likely to go to the peer support specialist and say, you know, what is a RAP plan? How do I write a RAP plan? When's the next RAP training? All those kinds of things. And so having that training available and having the peer professional understanding about RAP is important. Additionally, we have found that the CRSS professionals are far more effective in our jobs when we have our own RAP plan. Whether we are conducting RAP classes or not, RAP is an extremely valuable tool for us in our own lives, and it makes us much more effective in what we do on the job. When we're able to refer to our own RAP plan, when we're talking with persons served about, well, this is what I do and this is what's in my RAP plan, we're more effective on the job. And so I do recommend that CRSS professionals, all of them, have that level of training and have their own RAP plans. But you can't require it. Let me just put that out very carefully. Everything about RAP is voluntary. So you can't put it in some kind of a statement that, you know, you have to have a RAP plan to be a professional here at our organization. Everything about RAP is voluntary, but it is certainly highly recommended and will be very valuable. Mm-hmm. And then the last two bullets should be, and I would guess, are pretty much obvious to all the providers listening to this webinar, but we couldn't move on from this section without reminding folks about the importance of providing training on the basics of documentation of service provision. Since the majority of CRSS professionals are hired to provide Medicaid billable Rule 132 services, a training and documentation will be necessary unless they have experience documenting already. And even if they do have experience documenting already, they're going to need to know the tricks of the trade and what the specifics are within your organization. And similarly, in regard to any mental health crises, they're going to need to know the policies specific to your organization. And they're going to need to know some clarification regarding what is and what is not their role. You don't want them to be confronted with a situation where a person served is experiencing a mental health crisis and they respond based on what's natural to them. This is what I would do if a friend of mine was having a crisis, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then after the fact, they kind of get their hands slapped because they didn't know that, well, at our agency, this is the protocol. So you want to make sure that you have made it clear to them what the expectations are if they are working with a person who's experiencing a mental health crisis. So with that, we're going to go ahead and share some training opportunities. Probably you're eager to hear about those, and Sean is going to be sharing those with you. Back to you, Sean.
Thanks, Nanette. Yes, training. And I want to share with you some opportunities, which are some great sources to for CRS professionals or staff to participate in some trainings that are available. Particularly, there are a couple of trainings, a few actually, that are provided by DMH and the Collaborative, as well as some other sources that can be complementary to the trainings that your agency already provides. One is the annual CRSS competency training. And in this training, it provides 10.5 hours of training in the four CRSS competencies, as well as trainings in ethics. Attendees will get a well-rounded look at the different aspects involving the CRSS professional credential, as well as get a hands-on opportunity to not only learn, but to practice these skills. And we will be having, or there will be, trainings three times that happens annually, once in the spring in southern Illinois, then once in central Illinois, and then once in northern Illinois. And it's definitely, I got to say, a great source of training as far as what's expected in terms of performance or professional responsibility involving the CRSS credential. And next, training in the Wellness Recovery Action Plan, facilitators, or rather a facilitator training. And in this training, a person can become certified to facilitate RAP classes. And RAP was definitely, I think, a highlight. It teaches a person, you know, person-centered recovery techniques, you know, things that are identified by the person, of course, that's healthy or positive that they can include in dealing with things, whether it's coping skills or feeling a little bit down, that they can apply to themselves. So that's a great class there. And in order for a person to attend, they must have completed their own RAP plan, and while at the training, they'll learn how to help others to develop their own. And definitely one of the highlights there that's important, RAP is voluntary, which is definitely great. And moving on into some other trainings that are available on the next slide here. Any other trainings that might be available, or some of which you can look on the Illinois Certification Board's website. The Illinois Certification Board, also known as the ICB, has a listing of various training opportunities approved for continuing education units. I believe with most, if not all, certification, it requires continuing education units to be applied to that, and that, I think that affords the opportunity to stay on top of things that's going on, new approaches and so forth. And information pertaining to that can be found at their website at www.iaodapca, that's iaodapca.org/training. And the ICB provides various trainings throughout the year, and you can find these on their website. And particularly, they have a spring and fall conference, which includes workshops, specific to and relevant to the CRSS credential. And next, we have the National Alliance on Mental Illness, also referred to as NAMI, which has an education training and support center. NAMI in Illinois has education, training, and a support section on their website as well. Examples of relevant training include In Your Own Voice, which is a very helpful training in terms of learning to tell one's personal story effectively. There's also, they have an annual NAMI Illinois Educational Conference. And more information about trainings that may be available through NAMI can be found on their site at www.nami.org. Okay, moving along. We have some additional training opportunities I want to mention. I'll just give us a moment here to get that on the screen here.
Go ahead, Sean.
Okay, well, continuing on, another training opportunity is provided by the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, which is known as DBSA in short, which offers peer specialist training. The DBSA also provides training for peer support specialists. You can find out more about these trainings and other things they may have available on their website. their 40-hour certified peer specialist training can be a good part of the overall CRS training, training package. And their website is www.dbsalliance.org. And next, another excellent source of training happens throughout the regions of Illinois, which are the regional recovery conferences. They are planned by persons that are in recovery and also to promote new approaches to recovery. And I definitely got to say that's a great opportunity where we have conferences and things that are available that are planned for and planned by persons that are actually in recovery. And also CRSSEUs are typically provided at these conferences, and also it provides a great opportunity for staff to kind of network and branch out and get other helpful information pertaining to recovery. And additionally, there's a monthly consumer education and support statewide call-in. It takes place, I don't want to speculate, but I believe the last Thursday of each month from January through November. The monthly consumer education and support statewide call-ins offer 1.5 free CEUs. And information about that can be found at www.IllinoisMentalHealthCollaborative.com, all one word. And just keep in mind, those are free, and if a person was to attend 10 of those, they would have 15 CEUs per year. That's definitely, I think, a plus there, given the financial times, but that's another story. Okay. And now we have and I see the slides moving a little bit behind me, but that's okay. And moving along, coming up next, we're going to have question and discussion time, and this is an opportunity for you to ask your questions, and we have some questions for you too. And also stay tuned. The future webinar training session will emphasize program sustainability, which will occur on February 28th, and this will definitely share some ways to make sure your recovery support program will sustain the test of time. And now I'm going to move along and turn it over to Bryce and share where to find some more information that can be helpful for your recovery support program. Bryce?
Well, thank you so much, Sean. And I know we're giving people a lot of different training opportunities and resources here, but I think if anything, we want people to walk away from this training with the realization that you're not alone as you start these programs, and there's no need to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of training out there already that can complement what you have in mind to do. So I'm going to sort of quickly breeze through a few websites before we go into our Q&A session. The first, Sean mentioned the Illinois Certification Board website. You just click on their training center. Sean had mentioned their website, www.iaodapca.org. The collaborative website, CRSS section, which I mentioned earlier, you can find at www.IllinoisMentalHealthCollaborative.com, and there are so many great resources there. I can think of at least 10, but here on the screen there are three of them. The Illinois Model for Mental Health CRSS, that brochure that Nanette had mentioned on the value and benefits of hiring people with the CRSS. There's a great article called Mental Health Consumer Providers, a guide for clinical staff, which is very relevant to today's topic. Then RAP, Wellness Recovery Action Plan. We have information on that at our website, the IllinoisMentalHealthCollaborative.com. Sean mentioned NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, and Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance. www.dbsalliance.org. We also have listed on here the regional recovery support specialist. So as you look at these screens, this one and the next one, you'll find somebody that's relatively close to your area that is working with a lot of different mental health centers that are trying to move this forward just like yours is. And so, again, in terms of not reinventing the wheel, these are really go-to people as far as the CRSS credential and developing recovery support specialist programs. So those would be in Chicago, Rockford, Elgin, and then what you see on your screen now, Peoria, Springfield, the Metro East St. Louis area, and also the southern part of the state. So now, in my mind, this is the most important part of the presentation. We want to hear your thoughts. For questions and discussion, like for you on the phone to consider responding to one or more of the following questions.
This is over with.
First, to share any successes from your recovery support program that you'd like to share. You know, now's the time where it's okay to brag. It's okay to share, hey, this is what we've done. It's worked great. And that's going to help your peers on the line. How have you trained existing staff about the CRSS professional's role before or after hiring? What training resources or events have you found helpful? And we all want to recognize that hindsight, of course, is 20. In retrospect, what training do you wish that you would have provided? And most importantly, what questions do you have for us about today's topic? So with that said, we're going to go into our question discussion time. I think we'll leave these questions up on the screen for you to look at. And I will hand it back over to the Verizon moderator, who is going to give you instructions for how to get on to ask your questions. Verizon moderator.
Thank you. And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Once again, that's star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. And one moment for questions to populate.
Well, thank you. We'll take a moment to give people a chance to put in star 1 and get their questions on the line. And we're just really eager to hear from those in our audience. So thank you.
We do have a question from Patty Lindquist. Your line is open.
Hi, everybody. I just have a quick question. Are these PowerPoints going to be available? Is there a way we can use those as we go out to work with agencies?
Yes, definitely, Pat. In fact, two of them are already on the website. If you go to probably the easiest route is Consumer and Families and click on CRSS, you can find the two previous PowerPoints there. And then by the end of this week, you can also find this particular PowerPoint. And we really encourage people to use these resources. You know, you may feel like, oh, you know, shouldn't we develop our own? Hey, plagiarize away. No, it's not plagiarism. These are all public domain. Please use these resources. We definitely encourage that. So great question, Pat.
Well, and let me just add, and Bryce said this in his opening remarks, but we had been asked, and I think, Pat, you might have been the one who asked it, but we'd been asked before if these webinars were recorded and if there was a recording available. And at the time that we were asked, we responded that no, we didn't have the money in the budget for that. That was an incorrect answer. As a matter of fact, they have been recorded and they've been posted. The recording has been posted all along. But you know, sometimes the right hand and the left hand just they don't clap. You know, so there's like silence between right and left hand. So we just didn't know. We didn't know that they were being recorded and we didn't know that they were posted. So I was really delighted to learn that they are recorded and they are posted. And since I did learn that, I've asked, and they have now been, the recording has now been posted at the consumer site on the collaborative's website. They had already been posted at the provider site, but now we've got the PowerPoints and the recording posted both on the provider training page where their providers are used to going, and also on the consumer page under CRSS, where all of our CRSS information has been held.
Thank you, Nanette. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Leo Romato. Your line is open.
Hey, you guys. Where are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey, you guys. We're all here.
Yeah.
You know what? I think you just answered one of our questions. Can we get these slides right on the website?
Yes, you definitely can, and I'll just give that one more time. The website is www.IllinoisMentalHealthCollaborative.com. So we're really glad to hear that people are looking online and looking forward to getting these. Thanks a lot, Lena.
Okay, we have one more question. I believe it was back in May of last year. All of us took the competency test. Everybody did well, whatever. And somebody was going to follow through and get back to us on, you know, the actual trainings. Like, we've missed the first two. This is our first one, which is number three, and we'll be online for number four. What all of us CRSS wannabes are asking is, once we take the February one and we learn, we take it together, the first and second trainings that we missed, then we just take the test. Is that correct?
Are you referring to if you want to get the CRSS credential itself?
That's correct, Bryce.
Well, there's more to it than that. These four webinars are sources of potential CEUs for someone who's interested in getting the credential. But what the Illinois Certification Board is looking for are 100 clock hours of education that are relevant to the credential. And so these webinars add up to part of that. Another great source of those CEUs are the Consumer Education and Support Statewide Call-ins. And then, as Sean mentioned, in the spring we're going to have CRSS training that will be face-to-face trainings throughout the state, northern, central, and southern part of the state. And so we'd love to see you all at those trainings, too. So, the CRSS training provides at least 10 hours towards that as well.
But you're saying that even after we,
if we chose
to take the test before this 100 hours, so we still have to get 100 CEU hours before we get the credential?
Yes. And I would encourage you to reach out to the Illinois Certification Board directly to ask, you know, any specific questions you have about how that education can be gained, because you may have attended a number of events already that, you know, would count towards those 100 hours, but the test, the education, the work experience, those are all part of being qualified to have the credential, so we would encourage you to get all those pieces. But don't feel like, I would just say that the order in which you complete those steps is not as crucial. I would just affirm the fact that you have passed the CRSS test. That's a great piece of, you know, a great piece of the pie. And so it's not like you have to start all over again in terms of the education. But their phone number, they have an 800 number you can use within Illinois that is 1-800-272-2632. And so that's a great place to call to just ask your questions about, you know, tell them, okay, this is what I've done so far. Now, what do I have left to get the credential again? And that should be helpful.
That is that number for IODECA?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, great job passing the exam. That's quite an achievement, and we're glad that...
Yeah, we all did that in May. So some of us were grandfathered in the beginning, and the entire team did that in May and passed the competency, but we don't know where to go from there. That's kind of what held us up.
We're looking for the next test availability.
Okay. Again, I would say calling that number or calling one of your regional recovery support specialists would probably be the best route to go to find out what the next step for you specifically would be.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. And again, as a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question is coming from Doug Heiser. Your line is open.
Welcome to the webinar.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
The question I have is, I was on the Mental Health Collaborative homepage last week. I was able to print off the PowerPoint for the second call-in. There was no link for the first call-in, and I tried the call-in for today to get the PowerPoints, and the link's not working.
Okay, great question. So so today's webinar PowerPoint is not live yet. You can get that by the end of this week. It'll be up on the website. The best place for you to go on the website is the CRSS section. So what you've been looking at is on the home page under News and Events, and that's more of an announcement of what's next or what's recent. But to get everything that's kind of archived, you want to go to that home page and then click on the Consumer and Family button.
Consumer and Family.
And then click on CRSS in the left-hand menu.
CRSS website.
And you can, you know, you can access everything that's archived there. And that was one of the things that we developed a couple years ago, feeling the need for kind of like a home for everything CRSS, kind of a CRSS central. So, you know, hopefully that won't only be valuable for getting these PowerPoints, but can be an ongoing resource as you either continue to pursue the credential or as your organization, you know, hires people and starts up programs with CRSS professionals. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
And at this time, we have no further questions. Again, if you have a question, please press star 1.
Okay, thank you. So this is Nanette. I want to just kind of go back to the question that Lena's group was asking and address this to the larger audience. Something that we've had to provide clarification on all along since we began our work with the CRSS credential is the distinction between a competency-based credential and a curriculum-based credential. It's really usually when it's curriculum-based, they don't even call it a credential. A curriculum-based credential, if they use that word, and at the risk of, I'm just going to, you know, take the risk. DBSA, a partner of ours, a good partner of ours, Depression Bipolar Support Alliance, provides training in the peer support, and they provide CPS training, the Certified Peer Specialist, and they certified is at the beginning of that, just like CRSS is a Certified Recovery Support Specialist. So it's easy to create some confusion with the language, and so I'm going to use the DBSA training as an example in this distinction. To show the difference. The DBSA training is curriculum-based. So in other words, when you complete their 40-hour training, which is based on the curriculum, you've gone through the curriculum, you've completed the training, and I believe they have an exam at the end of the 40 hours, so you take the test, then you have your certificate, and you're done. And that's a curriculum-based credential. You know, quite honestly, another great example is a degree. you know, I have a bachelor's degree. I took all the classes. I took all the tests. I paid my fees. I have that degree, and it doesn't go away, and I don't have to do anything to keep it. I always have my degree. I have my bachelor's degree. So that's a curriculum-based example. Okay, so those are two examples. A competency-based credential is different. And it includes a lot of different elements in order to obtain it, in order to maintain it. In other words, you get it, but you don't keep it unless you maintain it, unless you do what you have to do to maintain it. And so in order to get it, you don't just go through a curriculum and take a test. You actually do take a test. So you heard the folks in the room in Chicago with Lena talking about, we took our test. Okay, so the test is one element, and this is true of all competency-based credentials. How did I learn this? By working with the Illinois Certification Board that manages all the competency-based credentials in our state that are in the same category as the CRSS and the CADC. They don't do licensing. That's a different group. So licensing, there are a lot of licenses, like the licensed clinical social worker, that kind of thing. That's a different category. They don't do licensing, but they do these competency-based credentials. And so the elements of a competency-based credential include a certain number of hours of training and education that are in the domains of that credential. So we gave you the domains of our credential: advocacy, recovery support, professional responsibility, and mentoring. So those are the domains of our credential. In order to get the credential, you have to have 100 hours of training and education in those domains. And you don't have to go through a certain curriculum to get them. You can get them from all kinds of different ways. You can piece that together, patchwork, if you will, an hour here, an hour there. Now, we do share with you ways to get a big chunk, like the DBSA training, because that's 40 hours in one big chunk, and it's also good training. Mm-hmm. You know, it fits in all four domains. It's going to cover a lot of the necessary information. So it's a good training, but it's not. You could also not do that training. RAP is another great training. You're going to get a 40, I think, close to 40, or 38 point something hours of CEUs out of RAP. But you don't have to have the RAP training either. But it's a good way to get a big chunk of training. And by the way, it's really excellent. It's probably the best training around. You know, but you piece it together. So you can collect those hours. And also, I think Bryce mentioned this, you can collect those hours if you've done some classes at the community college. So it doesn't even have to be things that were on our slides. You know, it doesn't have to be things like the statewide calls and the recovery conferences and stuff that we promote. It can be stuff that you've done outside of what we promote. And if you don't have your CRSS yet, it can be stuff that you did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be stuff recently. All it has to be is something that you have documentation for. So if you took a class 20 years ago and you still got a certificate showing that you took that class and the class falls in the domains, okay, something that fits, something that's relevant to this, something that's relevant. So you took a class at the community college and the class was about psychology, that's going to be relevant. It's going to fit. They're going to accept that 1.0 hour that you got at the community college as one of your hours. Okay, so this is why you should call the ICB. One of the things that I've learned is not to get too specific, because I'm not the expert. And the minute I get into talking details, I get myself into a trap. I'm like, whoa, I should just tell them like Bryce told them, call the ICB. They're the people that know the details. But what I wanted you to know is that a competency-based credential puts the pieces together. So you've got to have the education, the 100 hours of training and education. You've got to take the exam. That's just a one-time only. Once you've taken it, you don't have to take it again. You got to take the exam. You've got to have the work experience, which is
2,000 hours.
2,000 hours, which is equal to 1 year of full-time employment. So it might take more than a year to get the work experience, you know, because if you're working part-time. But you've got to piece that together, and you've got to have documentation of that work experience. And you have to pay fees. And you also have to maintain the competency-based credential. So, every 2 years you have to show that you've continued your education, that you've continued to develop your skills, and that you've continued to learn, and that's why we keep providing CEU opportunities and all that kind of stuff. About the fees, there are fees associated with this and any other competency-based credential, but we do have scholarship money available. So, you know, if you're concerned about, well, I can't afford to take the test, that's why you call the ICB, because they will provide you with a scholarship application and help you to get those fees taken care of. In terms of the scholarships are based on your financial need, so you have to show demonstrated need for the scholarships. But nevertheless, that's the pieces of that, and that's the distinction. And sometimes hard to help people get that, you know, particularly when we have, let's say, the DBSA training that's the CPS, 40 hours, you get your certificate, and then people are saying, well, how's that different or how does that fit? I got an email about that last week, even, Bryce, that was saying, you know, should I do that? Or because I want to get my CRSS, should I do this training or how does that fit? You know, and so hopefully by just kind of talking it out loud a little bit here, that'll help anybody, the providers too, because I think that the providers who are going to be helping folks get their CRSS are going to need to have an understanding of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking from personal experience, you know, I thought, okay, if I'm going to call the Illinois Certification Board, I've got to have it all together.
Right.
But the truth is they're so helpful.
Yeah.
And they really will help you to identify what do you have done and what do you have left to do.
Yeah.
So we just really want to encourage you to use that resource.
Yeah, good point.
Moderator, are there any other questions at this time?
Yes, our next question comes from Virginia Goldrick. Your line is open.
Hi, Virginia. Welcome.
Hi, Bryce. I just wanted to say I talked to somebody a couple weeks ago who wants her CRSS, and she said, what if people don't accept you? What if you're working with people who don't particularly think that you have anything of value to offer? They want to talk to maybe the so-called real staff as opposed to the recovery support specialist. And I said something about meeting people where they're at and that, you know, don't worry about whether they accept you. Your job is to support and validate everybody regardless. But what would you say to such a person?
Well, thanks, Virginia, and I can identify with that question. I think I've asked that, you know, myself on numerous occasions in working in mental health and recovery support. And one of the things that I've realized for myself is, you know, like we've talked about in this training, you know, recognize that some people are going to be on board and ready to embrace this now and build those relationships, and realize at the same time that not everyone's going to be, you know, kind of ready or totally open to what you're doing. And I think there what's really important is to kind of start thinking about, okay, so what results am I seeing? And how can I show the value of what I'm doing? You know, we go out there, we provide services, and we see the light of hope come on in someone's eyes. We see that twinkle. But then how do I convey that to someone else? And maybe that's, you know, this person, you know, after going through the, you know, getting support from the recovery support program, ended up pursuing a job. Or maybe they're starting to, you know, look happier when they come in, and they're actually trying to help other people themselves now. And so it's getting some of those things that at first seem intangible and writing them down, recording some of your successes, and thinking about, okay, how can we convey the success of this program? You know, but everyone in these positions, you know, we're ambassadors for recovery in a sense. And sometimes that means needing to learn how to convey the value of that, you know, and having support from other people as well. Sean, is there anything that you'd like to add from your experience to Virginia's question?
Well, something does come to mind in particular. That's something I can relate to where, Virginia, I think you mean in the case where the person expressed maybe a consumer or person serve mentions to the CRSS professional that they want to speak with the real staff, which I think kind of highlights maybe in terms of real staff, maybe a clinician or a case manager that may not be in name associated with recovery and that sort of thing. And that's something I've experienced. It's been some time ago, and I think what's appropriate to do or to take a look at, you know, in anything. Some people may not want to talk with us, you know, period. So I wouldn't, first of all, not take it personal and work to connect them with the other staff that's available. you know, if it is in fact someone else available, but definitely keeping safety and risks of harm and concern, but definitely work to connect them with someone else and go from there.
Yeah, that's great, Shauna.
Very helpful.
Yeah, and thank you, Virginia, for the question. It brought to mind another kind of one of these phrases that comes to mind for me often, and that is in recovery support, I think we need to, sometimes we need to develop a thick skin, but always retain that soft heart at the same time. So, you know, that's definitely a part of the learning process, is to kind of develop that thick skin where we don't take it personally, but at the same time not lose our sensitivity to people. So thank you both.
Thank you. Our next question is from Ann Sutton. Your line is open.
Welcome to the webinar.
Thank you. Actually, my coworker, Barbara Kendall, has our response.
Okay. Welcome, Barbara.
Hi. I just wanted to share the where it says what training resources or events you've found helpful. I'm a peer recovery support specialist who's getting ready to take the CRSS test the end of this month, and I also wanted to share that I did get a scholarship and encourage people out there to apply for the scholarship. But I really found the recovery conferences so inspiring to be around other peer recovery support people and to engage with them, because we're in like a little rural area in central eastern Illinois, and going to these conferences, I really loved meeting the people face-to-face that I hear their voices on these calls and whatnot. And of course, the RAP facilitator training, I really think it's one of the best things for a peer recovery support specialist to have the RAP training. I know it's not mandatory, but I really encourage it.
Well, thank you, Barbara. It's great to hear from someone who's, you know, been through some of this and is going through the process and hearing what's been valuable to you. And I would really agree with you on the benefit and value of those recovery conferences and everything else you mentioned. Thanks, Barb.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marvel Bullman. Your line is open.
Hi, it's Marvel Bullman.
Marvel.
My question is, wouldn't it be beneficial, because of the transformation of recovery into the culture and changing the culture from non-recovery to recovery, and then introducing the vision of recovery, wouldn't it be beneficial to have some kind of creative way every year to keep the recovery vision in the forefront of people's minds? And then that way it would emphasize and push the expectations of recovery. Mainly because in my experience, I see that some training is given and then it's not given, and people either sink back into the cultural thinking or they kind of forget what's going on because of things are going on. And just a way of doing it yearly, like a recovery celebration, let's celebrate recovery education, you know, something like that.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Marvel, and what a great example of someone who's providing recovery support now, bring up a great idea that could really help an organization to, you know, kind of capitalize on the momentum and keep it going by not just offering a training or an emphasis once, but, you know, on an annual basis. So thanks for sharing, Marvel.
Yeah, this is Nanette. I would just also say that, you know, it came to my mind, I was doing some cleaning in my file drawers in the office and came across a folder from an agency training that I had been asked to come to speak at in one of the agencies in the old, we used to call it the old North Central Network, it's now Region 3. But, you know, what that agency did was to actually close the agency all together, closed down, no services for one day every year, and they provided, you know, training to all their staff for that one day. It was an all agency training day. Obviously, you know, in the case Marvel, who's just asked the question, she works at one of the state operated hospitals. You can't close a hospital and do that. But there are ways that we provide training for staff at the state hospitals and get that done through the course of a day to cover 24 hours and cover all the shifts and get all the staff trained. And we have mechanisms for training all staff at a state hospital, so you definitely get that done. But my point being that at that agency that they had invited me to come, you know, they had said, we're going to do this every year. And they do the agency training day every year, but they had said to me that year, we're going to do recovery training as part of our all agency training day every year from this point forward. I do not know if they have carried that through or not, but certainly what Marvel has brought up is an excellent point. You know, we had said in one of our slides that you make it part of your new staff orientation so that it becomes part of the rhythm and that any new staff coming in. But I think Marvel's point is even as important, that it not just be new staff orientation, but it be something that you become part of an all-agency training day. If you have an annual training day, if you don't have an annual training day, make this an annual thing that you do some way to refresh the vision. Because as Marvel said, it is very easy for us to fall back into a non-recovery culture and old behaviors. And so it's one thing to kind of charge out the gate with a new vision, but it's another thing to maintain that vision. And looking for ways to maintain that, I think Marvel's point is an excellent one.
Thank you, Marvel. Thank you, Nanette.
Thank you. We have a question from Doug Heiser. Your line is open.
Yes. A while back, I called and I did get a form for a scholarship for the CEUs. And on the form, the first thing they said was, who else have you applied to before us? Can you give me any ideas of who I should apply to before? Thank you.
Thanks. Great question, Doug. Nanette, would you mind responding to that?
Sure. I think we have created a nice handout on this, which you can probably get from Virginia, and I assisted her in developing that handout, pressing my little memory bank at the moment. But things that come to mind, your local NAMI chapter is one. If you're involved in a faith community, then your faith community, your church is another. If you have a 708 board, which is a mental health governmental board, the 708 board is a great resource. DBSA is another. Any local support groups that might have funds available for training scholarships. Oftentimes, if you are seeking financial support from an organization, one wonderful thing for you to do is to say, you know, if you assist me with a partial scholarship. Because ICB will often provide a partial scholarship if you can get a partial scholarship from another organization. And so instead of asking for the other organization to pay for everything, just asking for the other organization to pay for a portion of the cost. And also another good thing to keep in mind is if you offer something in return. In other words, if you will provide me a partial scholarship, I would be happy to come and be a speaker at an upcoming support group meeting for your NAMI chapter or whatever organization it is that you're seeking the funds from. So hopefully those ideas are helpful. And again, as I mentioned, Virginia has a copy of that that little handout that we created regarding that question that you asked as well, Doug. Thanks.
Thanks, Annette. Thanks, Doug.
And that's no further questions.
Okay, well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today. It's been a valuable webinar, and we're really looking forward to our fourth session on program sustainability on February 28th. In a moment, I'm going to turn this back to Amy, who will kind of close us out. We do want to encourage people to complete the webinar survey that should pop up at the end of this training. We also want you to know that another potential avenue is if you have questions you haven't asked today, or if you have questions about, okay, how do we do the CEU sign-in, how do we get that done, you can always contact trenda.hedges@valueoptions.com. There's a fax number there on the screen, 217-801. 9189. But again, we just want to thank everyone for joining us, and I'm going to turn it out, turn it back to Amy to close the call. Amy?
All right. Thank you, Bryce. If there are no more questions in the queue, that will conclude our call for today. I would like to remind the audience that today's call audio and PowerPoint will be posted under the Provider Resources heading on the Provider Information page of the Collaborative's website. It will be in MP3 format for download within 2 to 3 business days. I would also like to remind everyone that we value your feedback, so please take a few minutes to complete the brief survey that will appear when you close out of the online form today. Laura, you may now please push the speakers through the post-conference and disconnect the main line.
Thank you. And this does conclude today's conference. We do thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect your lines.